This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
It appears that once again you are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 162, sponsored by Vexil from Funimation, InStock Trades, and Netflix.
On the boulevard I landed, we used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract,
and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the frankfurter.
Yo, fight. It's the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. 162 wonderful episodes in. I am Josh. I'm here with Ron.
Hey!
And Connor.
Hello.
This is weird.
Hello. Why is it weird?
I don't know. It's fine. Carry on.
All right. I like to switch it up. This is my martini lounge read.
Yeah, it's a chill kind of tone. That's all. Yeah, it's
good. iFanboy.com is a website we created because we like comic books. Maybe you like comic books too. I bet that's why you're here. Every week, we'll read a whole bunch of comics, whatever it is we feel like reading. Some we don't. Then one of us has the task, the responsibility, nay, the burden of picking the best of the week. They call that the pick of the week. They write a little review about it. Then we come here, talk about it on the podcast, talk about some other books, try to make some jokes. Try to pull the weight of the weary world off your shoulder. One quick note before we get started. If you have not read your books, this is just going to be one big confusing mess. Oh, it might be a little funny, sure, but it's not going to be the same. So there's spoilers ahead. Maybe. So read your books. You come back. Then you listen to this. Maybe listen. You know, you could. You could listen to it once when you haven't read them. Read your books, listen to it again, and see if it's better that way. Or maybe you'll decide, Jesus, it's much better if I haven't read my books.
We've never experimented with the different, done some testing to see if it's better if you haven't read your books or not. So if you let us know how that works out for you.
The team at Yale, they're dealing with that. Ron, it sounds to me like you're raring to go. Yeah. You had the pick of the week.
I did have the pick of the week, and I was actually talking to Connor in one of our many conversations throughout the week on Friday, saying that this was a tough week to pick because there were a lot of, I mean, it was the end of Secret Invasion, you know, Justice Society, X-Infernus, there was just a lot of, you know, Criminal, there was a lot of stuff that came out, and there were a lot of solid books. But there were, you know, it was finding the one that jumped out to me, like that sang to me as the pick of the week, was a little bit of a challenge. And when that happens, at least personally, it always ends up to be a bit of a surprise in my mind. And what it was the pick of the week ended up being X-Men Noir issue number 1, a 4-issue limited series by Fred Van Lente and Dennis Calero. I wasn't originally going to buy this. It wasn't on my pull list. I kind of, in these tough economic times, I've adopted a bit of a rule that I buy I buy Uncanny, I buy X-Men Legacy, I buy X-Factor, and I can't really buy all of the miniseries that come out. I didn't buy that Magneto miniseries that everybody was raving about. I'm gonna pick it up and trade. But you know, I just can't afford to. You know, they put out a lot of X-Men stuff.
And I gotta say, there's two words in this title, and one of them says Ron, and the other one says no, not Ron.
Right? Yeah. Well, that was the other thing too, is that I've been for about a year or so, I've been on a kind of a staunch anti-noir kick. Not anti. I was just kind of sick of it. It just became like with Criminal and with Powers and with all this kind of stuff. It just seemed like it was a bit of a buzzword and a bit of a trend that was going on. I know you guys eat it up, I don't have an analogy for how you eat it up. But
cream?
I was going to say like poo on a stick, but then I realized that that's not a good thing. So,
well, it's not a trend; it's a genre.
Yeah, it's a genre, but it's a genre whose popularity has been trendy. Does that make sense?
It's not trendy.
Yeah, it's been a trend. It's been a trend of noir books. We didn't have noir books like eight years ago. You know, or 10 years ago.
Those five issues of Criminal and Powers that combined have come out over the past 24 months. That's we are blown away. It's like the shelf behind me can't support the weight of all that noir.
I'm just saying. To me, it felt like yes, you're right. It's a genre, but its popularity has been a little trendy. But
and opinions of Ron, which do not necessarily reflect those of iFanboy.com and subsidiaries.
That's an ongoing disclaimer there. but I was in the comic book store and I was flipping through it, and something about Dennis Calero's art really made me say, you know, let me pick this up and see how it is. And a couple of folks in my store had already read it and they said it was actually pretty good. And of course, you know, Cyclops is on the cover, so that's always good. Or at least the cover I got. I don't know if there's a variant cover or not.
There's a black and white variant, like the ads.
Yeah, that's the cover I got. I didn't get the standard cover then. And essentially what this is, and I wrote about it in the review on iFanboy.com, I don't know what – this doesn't have an imprint or anything like that. I don't know if this is Marvel Knights or whatever it is. But it's like this is Elseworlds, the old DC Elseworlds kind of we're going to take a concept, take these characters and take them out of continuity and take them out of their typical kind of concepts and do a spin on it, you know. So like some of the old DC Elseworlds titles that I liked were, you know, Superman Red Sun and Kingdom Come was actually originally an Elseworlds title, and they were kind of like DC's What If, you know, I guess. Yep. This idea of what if Batman was a vampire, and what if Superman was raised in Russia, and all this kind of stuff. And what this is doing, this is saying, you know, what if, you know, the X-Men existed in the 1930s New York City noir kind of world. And we're presented with, you know, the cops seem to be the bad guys. You know, there's a Detective Dukes who is, you know, Fred Dukes, the Blob. And we discover that there's a murder mystery and that a redheaded girl named Jean Grey has been murdered. And this crazy guy who ran a reform school, Xavier's in jail. And it just kind of, and there's, you know, there's a guy named Remy LeBeau walking around, and it was just taking these characters that I've known for years and putting a different spin on them and putting that noir spin on it. And I was really impressed with Fred Van Lente's writing. I mean, like the story itself, what it had to me, it had, you know, all the kind of noirish kind of, you know, detectives and cops and the whole kind of setting and all that kind of stuff. And it just really was, it was a lot of fun to read. It was a lot of fun to you know, take this concept of a comic that I've known for years and look at it from a different lens. So did either of you guys take a risk on this book like me, or am I the only one who tried it, considering it's the X-Men? Or
no, I bought it. It was really good. It was surprisingly good. It was I mean, I don't know much about Fred Van Lente. I don't think I've read anything by him. But.
Well, for those who don't know, Fred Van Lente did a lot of independent books, and he's one of the guys behind Action Philosophers, and which was the comics that tell you about philosophy and philosophers. And he also did the Comic Book Comics, which is kind of like a cartoonish history of comics. But then recently he's been working for Marvel, and he's doing Wolverine First Class, and he's also doing the Incredible Hulk with Greg Pak.
Marvel Zombies 3.
Yeah, he's been kind of
he's the next. I feel like he's the next Fraction guy that they're trying to usher in.
Yeah,
and Jonathan Hickman is like, no. But, sorry,
I only know him from doing our podcast panel in San Diego. That's
yes,
all I know him.
Yeah. So,
but no, it was. I mean, I bought it purely for the art and the concept.
Yeah,
because I love Elseworlds titles for the reasons you said. It's fun to take these characters in a new world and experience them with new surroundings and new stories. So this is an Elseworlds book, basically, unless something happens at the end that brings it into continuity.
No, it's not going to. I mean, it can't.
But for now, it is, in my mind. So yeah. I bought it for that. And I loved the advertisements. I loved the cover art for the variant cover. And I actually dug through the pile on the shelf of the comic store to get the variant cover, which is something I never do. But
and even at the end of the book, like the article, the Sentinels article by Bolivar Trask, which is cool, you know, like, so...
It was fun. It was a, you know, it's gritty and shadowy, and the cops are morally ambiguous, and the X-Men are all bad reform school kids. I mean, there are superpowers. It's not like they're all just civilians. There are superpowers here, but
yeah,
it's set in this world that's interesting and fun, and it's something that, you know, Magneto is the head of detectives, and his,
yep,
you know, and it's he's corrupt, and he beats the crap out of criminals to get them to confess or to leave town, and it's kind of like Confidential, and it was good.
Yeah, what's really interesting is that it works on different levels. And me as the X-Men fan, is it's part of the fun is seeing who is in what role, and ooh, there's the Blob, and there's Magneto, and there's Cyclops, and there's, you know, like Marie Rankin, like, you know, Calvin Rankin was the Mimic, and so is there a connection between, you know, who, when Xavier tells the detective to find Marie Rankin, is that going to be a link to Calvin Rankin, like that sort of thing?
Right.
But then on the level of someone like you who don't really care about the X-Men, it was a noir story, you know, like it was just that kind of hard boiled story.
Yes or no, I wouldn't say I don't care about the X-Men, but
no,
I would say I got about half the characters. Like, I didn't know about the Blob, but it was one of the few times I didn't hate Gambit.
Yeah.
And, you can say that.
Black Tom Cassidy was in it, which is kind of cool. So I thought that was it's taking characters that aren't, you know, I mean, yes, you know, Cyclops, Xavier, Magneto, but it's like not the frontline characters all the way through. So
yeah, it's one of those. Yeah. When I saw the pick of the week, I was one of those things where I went, "Oh, all right." Like, I wouldn't have expected it, but I didn't disagree with it. So it was a fun read. So I mean, I can understand why it'd be heightened for you.
Yeah.
So,
Josh, did you dig it, or
I was unaware of its existence until this point?
Okay, until Friday morning.
Actually, I didn't even look at the pick of the week until I got here. apparently we have a website and it updates daily.
No, you might want to check it out if you grab Connor's copy. I mean, you like the noir stuff, so maybe you dig it.
It was surprisingly good, but Josh loves comics so much that he won't read it.
Yeah.
That's how much I love them. I can't take the risk of my not liking something, so I won't read something. I won't read anything.
Weren't you the guy that wrote the impassioned article on iFanboy about how much comics were the best thing in the world?
They are. I can't
read. Yet you never want to read any of them.
What the hell do I have behind me making the floorboards bend?
All right, well, did you guys read Secret Invasion number 8?
See, now I feel bad about it in reference to what we were just talking about. It's like, yeah! Shit, I shouldn't have read that stuff. Damn.
So it's finally over. The saga is complete. Josh, was it worth it to see Mockingbird come back to Hawkeye's arms?
No. That was nice. That was a great page. I got a little choked up during that page.
Yeah.
What annoyed the living bejesus out of me was the fact that this story was told in flashback from somebody else's point of view and not actively as it was going on. And it was just like, and I know that it makes sense because the whole story has been told in this weird way, but I was just like, it's just such a, like, you want this to be the big ending of the thing, and it's sort of told like it already happened by somebody else, and I don't know. I was like, this just, it didn't,
you know what,
feel
this
like
was it, this whole problem with this series has been there's no connection to it. It's been a series at arm's length from the reader.
This
issue just made it worse. It was just like, well, now it already happened, we're gonna skip through the important stuff. Wasp dies, but we're gonna show that in two panels and move on. It was just kind of like,
okay.
What kind of annoyed me too was like in the opening two page spread when Wasp was like exploding, and on the left page of it you see the Watcher kind of watching. We never understood why the Watcher was there.
Well, look, right away, I actually looked at the end of the recap bit, right, and explains what happened to the Wasp. But that, we didn't actually know that yet. Like, it's like, it says that they give her a thing that...
Oh, that was in last issue.
Yeah. But that was in a New Avengers. Hank gave her this formula.
But they didn't really explain what it was. It was just that Hank had slipped her something and it was bad.
Yeah.
But like, when you read this, it's like an airborne toxin which could only be triggered by Hank himself, which he does with his, and like that stuff wasn't entirely clear what it was, or like we understood that something happened, we understood how it happened, but then in the issue they go, and I was like, I don't remember that ever being explained. And then so in the issue then they explain it on that first page. So why is that in the recap?
Yeah.
And just feel like it was like kind of like they were skipping around in a lot. And you know, at one point I kind of thought, well, you know what? If nothing else, let's appreciate the art. And I was looking, and it's really, there's all these characters and these, you know, great poses and these big sort of vistas with all of them. But a lot of times it's just a lot of characters standing around. You don't really know where they are.
That's been my problem with all the battle scenes in this comic, because there's no context for any of it.
Yeah.
No, there's not. And listen, I'm telling you right now, I started this and I was like, I want to try to find something to appreciate about it and something to like about it. And that kind of stuff really got me, and that sort of passive retelling of the thing as if it had already happened really bugged me. I don't know why.
There's one awesome thing about this comic.
Yes.
Old school Iron Man armor.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, which was totally underplayed.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know, Thor gives Tony the shaft again. It's just like
There were two oh come on moments for me, and one was when Wasp dies, and there's the whole monologue about how everybody was mad, and they show the double page shot of everybody being angry.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure Bullseye's really pissed off that the Wasp died. number two was when they all walk off the ship. The hey, everyone's back alive again.
Yeah.
Where all this stuff has happened, no consequences, and there's Spider Woman, and there's Mockingbird. No,
I love
nothing.
That someone actually said, though, at least now we know we can trust everybody.
Really? Are we sure? They walked off a Skrull ship.
It's the same thing that happened 8 issues ago.
I know.
No, these ones are fine, because it wouldn't be a good trick at all to make these people fake also.
Oh, man.
This is not Brian Michael Bendis that I know.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
And I think that's kind of what upsets me. The thing is, if this was written by somebody else, I would probably be more forgiving of it, but I was just like, come on.
This just shows that he's got a really, really good talent in small, focused stories, and he just... You know, I haven't read House of M, but I don't hear good things about it.
Yeah, no, this is way tighter than House of M. I mean,
can I give this a compliment though? Much like Civil War, at the end of it, I thought, okay, this is an interesting place to be.
Yeah. Well, that said, I mean, definitely the two-page spread at the end was an oh shit moment. I mean, that was the whole kind of anti-Illuminati thing. Was really, really cool. So, you know, and that's really their thrust of it. And I still got to wonder, and I know we talked to Jim McCann, recently, and you can hear that on the last episode of Talksplode, and said that, you know, he's kind of saying, you know, no, we didn't change the ending and all this kind of stuff. But I really got to wonder, like, the whole embrace change thing.
Well, that thing has to throw us off to make us think that. And that's, I give them credit for making us all think the Skrulls were going to win for a little while.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they pulled the rug. I believe they did, just because they found a way to fool us.
Yeah, maybe either that or they did change it. I mean, and what I think that there might be credence to a theory that they were always going to get to this point, but they just sped up the timeline.
Considering how far ahead people like Bendis write, I don't think that's possible.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that because Bendis had said specifically that. They didn't love Secret Invasion so much, but like Joe really liked the thing that came after.
Yeah,
and so I think that it's all connected. I mean, it could be all
these. Well, they didn't really love Civil War that much, but they loved the thing that came after.
Here's my problem is none of this stuff gets explored. We just move on to the next event, which changes everything again. We never explored Civil War.
We got
a few months of everybody being kind of having animosity towards each other, and then we went right into Secret Invasion, and now
one mediocre series of Avengers Initiative,
and we never got to explore the ramifications of the Skrull invasion. Now we're going right into this Dark Reign thing, and then that'll lead to the next thing where it's just kind of like there's no time to, like last week I talked about taking a year off from a. Have a year where this anti-Illuminati is in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, there's a lot of great stories there.
Yeah.
But we're going to go into Dark Reign, and that's going to, you know.
Isn't that what it is, though?
Yeah, that's basically what it is, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I think the jury's still out on where Dark Reign is going to go, because we got to see what they're going to do with it. But, of course, sure enough, there's that page of all the books you need to read for Dark Reign, and it's like, oh, geez. So.
It is annoying to sit at a table very close to Enchantress, because those horns are just.
It's Loki, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, it's Loki.
No.
Female Loki.
Who did that? Is that that's Straczynski, isn't it?
I think so.
I never saw that coming. Yeah, that's a great, great thing. That was totally necessary.
So,
now, ironically,
yep.
New Avengers 47, my pick of the week.
Fantastic.
Well, first off, Josh, did you like the cover?
Yeah. No. Well, yes. I don't know. It's
Avengers West Coast number one.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is. Not exactly, but...
Yeah, well, it's an homage to that.
But
yeah.
I wanted to see the Hawkeye in as Skrull, or if there was any point to that still. And is that Bam Margera? Oh, I guess that's Wonder Man. But still,
Oh, that's Cyclops.
Oh, is it? Oh, you're right, it is.
Yeah. It's Avengers West Coast number one cover.
I'm starting to turn into Ron with covers.
Thank you. Finally.
You're becoming more and more of a fanboy as every year goes on. It's really weird.
No, I love it. The thing is, I don't mind a pinup cover or something that looks really nice, but I'm sick of these theme covers.
Well, the thing is that this is the Avengers West Coast cover, and it's got Hawkeye as Skrull standing there, and the whole issue is about Luke and
Jessica. Yeah, but so what? Every single Avengers comic this whole year has been that.
So to complain about
it now is kind of silly.
Well, no, I've been complaining about it from the get-go. Coming around.
Either way, no, I'm just sick of the theme covers. I got sick of the zombie things. It didn't really bother me, and now I'm like, come on, enough with the Skrull things. It's over. Let's move on. Especially since it didn't have any other thing to do. But I got to say, on the other side of things, it made me very happy to come in to look inside of the issue because I didn't know what to expect, and I was
yes, exactly. The solicitation on iFanboy didn't have Michael Gatos on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't read the title page. I never read the recap page. So I go into the story, and the beginning story is written by Philip Tan.
Can we back up to the recap page? I would read these recap pages if it wasn't for the mind-numbingly distracting background.
Yeah, the font is hard on the eyes.
Anyway, okay.
Anyway, so I'm reading this, and literally, this I swear to God, this happened. There's the page where Cage is finally holding his baby, and Jessica's sitting there, and I'm thinking, that is not Jessica Jones. Who is this, like, sex pot?
Yep.
Girl in the cut-off shorts, and man, she really lost her baby fat. Like, she got really the stomach is really
she lost her baby fat. Yeah, she does have like her midriff showing.
Yeah, and I was like,
and I totally thought that too.
But then I turned the page, and there's Michael Gatos, and I went, holy shit! Like, there
I flipped
she is.
To the cover.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute, this is it is Gatos, and then I was like, I hope it's for the rest of the whole thing.
It was a lot of it. Oh God, it's so good.
It was like, you know, we talked about the Secret Invasion wasn't Bendis. This was Bendis. This was like. He had the patter down, the alias patter, that 1-2-page shot where it's just them chatting back and forth in the office. I laughed out loud when they talked about Dakota, you know, Dakota being, she not liking Dakota, and oh, it was so good.
It was so
and
it,
even the pages with no dialogue on them, like, they just worked, and it's just, oh, this was like, you can't go home again. This was just, it was right back into it, you know?
He could go back to alias, I think he could.
Yeah. Instinct,
I wish.
Yeah.
Gatos hasn't lost a step, but
it almost makes me want to go read Manhunter over at DC.
No, don't.
Why is that the same style?
The Gatos art is great. It's just the story's not
right. No, I mean for the art for Gatos.
I buy it for the art. It's really good. Yeah. But there's something about the two of them working together on this one particular character, and it's we haven't really seen Jessica because she's been drawn by all these different people who draw her in midriff bearing outfits, which we know from reading Alias she would never wear.
Yeah. Yep. You're
so
right.
So now
a very good
it's like.
Point.
Now it's like, oh, here it is. I mean, I've got the Alias Omnibus, right? You know, I can see it now, and I just miss that book so much. And this was like such a nice, and it was better that it was a surprise, and I didn't expect it. I didn't know it was coming, and I just, after reading Secret Invasion, I read this, and I was just so happy.
So
happy.
So lest you think we're jerks, no, we like things that we liked before.
Yeah.
as long as it happened before. And we liked it then. That's totally fine.
So it was a big Secret Invasion week, and it's all wrapped up now. So
God, done with that.
Yeah,
I was so excited about it.
No.
Well, the first issue was still great. It was a good issue. First issue.
Yeah.
But you're right, Rod. I didn't even think about the fact that the people coming off the ship happened in the first issue.
Yeah, totally. It was almost the exact same pose. Yeah.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Because
and this time Clint was like, it's got to be her this time. It wasn't last time.
I wasn't fooled last time.
Fool me once. Come here, you. Give me a big old kiss. You've been dead for 2 decades, but whatever. Broke my heart.
Oh, God.
But like you have spaceship breath.
Why do they have Colgate on their Skrull ship?
Did you hear what she said, though? What are you wearing?
Yes.
Damn, Bobby. What is he wearing? Because those aren't his clothes. Those belong to some woman who can't hear anything. It's not cool.
Oh, man. I love that you're so steadfast about that. That's so funny.
They've never talked about how he fits into that now.
Like, yeah, exactly. Well, it's spin particles or unstable molecules.
Well, apparently there's all sorts of structure inside for her.
Oh, wait, let me take out the female chest plate.
But he could accidentally develop boobs. I would be careful wearing something like that.
Oh, God. All right, so the other big event that ended last week was Batman, and with Batman 682, Connor, I read this issue in the store, so I want to hear what you think about it before I share.
Why did you read the issue in the store?
Because I'm fascinated by this whole Batman world now.
Yeah, but you haven't read anything else.
I know. I love having no context.
I've read a lot of the rest of it, and that didn't really help. So
I thought it was really good. I thought it was like an origin.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically summing up Batman's history, because this is what it is. It's wrapping up Bruce Wayne Batman, and it's going through, and Grant Morrison connects all the events. He makes it work in context. He goes through the whole emotional arc. We see how dark he got in the beginning, and then how Dick Grayson changed that, and then he got dark again. It's basically a wrap up, but then at the end we find out he's strapped in that chair from the first issue of Final Crisis.
So RIP happens before Final Crisis.
Either that, or it's happened in his head. We don't know yet.
Oh, it's all a dream, and then turns out Patrick Duffy's still alive.
Yes. If it turns out, which I don't think it will be, because the whole rest of the way is dependent on him not being Batman. I think that it's not going to be that. But if it would, I'd give him a lot of credit for having the balls to do that.
Well, what I took away from it was that RIP happened before Final Crisis.
We know that. That's definitely true. Yeah.
Okay. So that was what I took away from it. So. I thought it was neat. I like seeing all the Batman through the years.
I really enjoyed it.
That they tied it into what else was going on, since they're both his stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? It's only the least you can do, I guess, is make them work.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was good.
Cool.
I mean, it was the number one, you know, pick of the week on the website. It was,
yeah.
For me, I want to know what the last page means before I can really decide if it was great or not.
It means that he's gritting really hard.
He's in the scroll ship.
Yeah, he's in the scroll ship going. Yeah.
So for some reason there was a helicopter explosion, and then somehow he ended up in this guy who's not Clayface.
Right.
I mean, so did they fish him out of the water or what?
Don't ask questions.
Don't try to make it make sense.
I think he's done a really good job making it make sense. He makes it all make sense in this issue.
Right, the question is, so Batman RIP ends, and I read that ending. The costume is all torn and tattered. He jumps into the helicopter. The helicopter goes down. No, you know, we don't see a body. Whatever, fine. How does he end up in this strapped in this thing with his costume on and gritting his teeth? How does that happen?
To be concluded. We'll find out next month.
Yeah. Same bat channel.
Exactly.
I mean, that's my question, is that how did the two get linked to each other? So
he hasn't finished his thing yet.
Right, no, I know, but I mean that's what I'm curious about.
So. Well, we'll find out. That's why I'm saying I don't know until we get more information.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Cool. So are you guys ready for some Cyberpunk?
Every day, babe.
Time to tell you guys about Vexil or Vexile, depending on some people wrote in saying that I'm pronouncing it wrong. Vexilil.
It's probably Vexilil.
Yeah, it's probably Vexilil. I like Vexil, so I'm going to say Vexil. Vexil is a two-disc special edition DVD that is now out on both regular DVD and Blu-ray. It's from the creators of Appleseed, and it comes with a CG anime movie about the dangers of cutting-edge science of robotic biotech. Geek Magazine, which is a very fine publication, called Vexil balls-to-the-wall action. Basically, you got a battle between man and machine. Humanity is going to stand to suffer the most. It's really cool, kind of, you know, sci-fi, cyberpunky, kind of, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, if you check out the 30 minutes of clips at funimation.com/Vexil, you can see a lot of, you can get a kind of feel for what it looks like. I looked at it; actually, looks pretty cool. And I would watch it. I haven't watched it yet, but I might. So go to funimation.com/Vexil. And then for those of you who need to know how to spell it, it is Vexille. So funimation.com/Vexille. Check out Vexil from Funimation. So let's talk about the rest of the books. And I want to talk about X Infernus number one. So this is, the miniseries, four issue miniseries from C.B. Cebulski and, what's the guy's name? Kamikoli. One of those Italian guys.
Giuseppe Camicoli. Giuseppe Camicoli of he did Hellblazer, and he did, I believe he did The Intimates with Joe Casey from Wildstorm.
Oh, I read that.
Yeah.
That was good. I like The Intimates. That was a lot of fun. With a David Finch cover. Yeah. So this is kind of a loose sequel to Inferno. Although not, you know, it's not really. I mean, Inferno was a crossover that was like 1988 in the X-Men books. That was like one of the ones that most people remember. Yeah, what involved was involved the whole demon world, like Belasco and a demon called Sim, S-apostrophe-Y-M, and Madeline Pryor, who is Cyclops's cloned wife of clone of Jean Grey, who he married. He didn't know she was a clone, Mr. Sinister, all that kind of deal. She becomes the Goblin Queen, and basically New York City becomes a whole goblin kind of inferno, and that was the whole thing.
Don't you hate demons?
I do hate demons, and it's funny because I really don't like magic and demons and things like that, but I loved Inferno. It was crazy.
Those were my first X-Men comics, and it totally like informed everything since then. Like, yes. I'm like, I didn't get any of that, and I remember trying real hard and reading a bunch of books.
Yeah,
and to this day.
So essentially, Ileana Rasputin, who's Colossus's sister, also known as Magic, has been trapped in what the demon world of Limbo, and you know, Colossus wants to go save her, but Cyclops says no. And then, you know, we kind of see some bits of her in the whole demon world, and then it's kind of the X-Men kind of pulling in. You know, it's a lot of, you know, soul swords and soul daggers and things like that. This is a lot of fun. I mean, Cebulski did a good job of it. I really did enjoy it. I mean, some people I spoke about who were fans of Inferno didn't really like it. I think it's one of those things, again, where it's the first issue and we'll see how the whole miniseries goes through. But, you know, we get introduced to – there's a little kind of demon Illuminati roundtable with Dormammu and Mephisto and some of the other big demons. And we see Belasco's daughter trying to take his – what's rightfully his. And, you know, it's kind of – it's that link. It's one of those weird kind of tendrils of the X-Men universe that it never really made sense, the whole kind of demon thing. Not that it doesn't make sense, but it's like, you know, kind of like the Asgardian Wars. It's just, you know, like, why were they doing that? But it's a fun, you know, in continuity kind of thing. So I'm enjoying it. So I'll see how the rest of the series goes, but I'm excited for it.
I would love it if you walked up to Walt Simonson one day and just went, why did you do that?
why
did you do any of this? I don't, what's the point? What does Sue Storm have to do with this? Wasn't this like Marvel's big, like, announcement at San Diego? Like,
yeah,
it was this.
People went nuts in that room. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was the only announcement they had.
It was the big X-Men announcement. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Magic.
I thought it'd be much more popular on the website, but it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. I feel as if they had announced it and it like came out in August or September, they could have rode that wave. But I think that too much time has passed since the announcement. So,
speaking of, why would they do this? Why would they make a sequel to Marvel's?
Well, okay. So Marvel's Eye of the Camera, number one of six. I picked it up. Did you guys pick it up?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why on earth, okay, of all the comic books that came out in the 90s, what one had the most impactful cover treatment? What one was so iconic?
Marvel's.
Youngblood.
So even if you were going to do a sequel, why wouldn't you continue that and have the big ass Marvels across the cover, and even on the bottom have it say Eye of the Camera? That's fine. But why, like, I feel as if they completely fumbled this from the cover onward.
Probably because Alex Ross wasn't involved.
Exactly. And the thing is that I don't think you do this without Alex Ross, unfortunately.
You definitely don't do this without Alex Ross.
It was.
I mean, I'm not like Alex Ross worshiper, but he is Marvel's as much as Busick is.
Yep.
So
Cure Busick.
Dark Knight Returns 3 with Pete Tomasi and Billy Tanned.
What? Nothing against Pete Tomasi.
No. But,
So this was written by Busick. I don't know when he wrote it. This must have been done years ago because he's at DC, right? He's a DC exclusive.
He's not exclusive. He's writing a bunch of stuff for a bunch of people.
Oh, okay, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. So, but apparently, so Busick wrote it, and Jay Ancelito did the art, and with Brian Haberlin as well doing the colors. And it's that weird kind of drawn and then digitally painted kind of look and feel. And it's Phil Sheldon, and it's like Marvel sequel, and it feels you get an echo of that it feels right, but it's wrong because it's not Alex Ross. You don't do this without Alex Ross. That's so.
I wasn't going to touch it without the original team. That's just wrong. Yeah. I don't need a sequel. I don't need a sequel regardless with them.
Yeah.
It was almost a perfect little slice of comics. You don't need any more.
Kind of like Kingdom Come.
Yes. But not sequel. That wasn't sequel. There's no sequel to Kingdom Come.
Right, we're just reveling in it, in Justice Society.
Yeah, but it's not affecting the story. It's not continuing the story.
We're gonna get to that in a little bit. But yeah, no, I agree with you. This is, I mean, and even if you're gonna do it, why do you stray from what you knew would work? You know what works so well about it? You know, so I don't know. That's bad.
I think we got a bit for next year's San Diego show. Why? Why did you do this?
Exactly. Yeah. What's wrong with you? Why did you do that?
It's just like we like to talk to Joe Quesada for a little while. About what? Why? Why? I think the main theme of the interview is going to be why.
We're not getting an interview. All right. Moving on. Hellboy. Hellboy Wild Hunt. I heard nothing but raves about this.
Number one. Issue one, right?
Yeah, okay. I realized that I haven't – there's a couple of miniseries in the middle that I didn't read because it took a while to come out, and I'm not caught up on the trades. But I bought this anyway, and apparently if you had read Darkness Calls before it, this is better. I didn't notice the difference because I'm always sort of generally confused about where Hellboy is and why, but it sort of works itself out, which I found this to be the case. I just want you to imagine that there's this house in the English countryside, literally says somewhere in England, and Hellboy is in a room with a bunch of old aristocratic men in white tuxes, you know, like these kind of guys, right?
Bully.
And they're talking to him about a giant hunt, and it's the giant hunt that goes on because the giants are going to wake up again. And he's like, "All right, yeah, all right, sounds bad, whatever."
Wait, literally giants, not yes, like a giant yes, hunt, yes. Like it's a like a big hunt, but hunting giants.
Hunting the hunting of giant persons.
Okay,
so yes, giants, as in Jack and Beanstalk.
Okay,
and so at the end of them explaining this whole thing to us, they're like, "Would you like to come on the hunt with us?" And he's sure. You know what? Because he's nonchalant. Sure, why not? So basically, it's just Hellboy like out. Like that's the end of it. Is that he goes off with them on horseback, and one of them has to wear this big scary like deer head because he's the leader of the hunt, and he's off to hunt giants. And then there's a twist at the end. But this was totally fun. Duncan Fegredo on art, who totally, out of all the people doing Hellboy, like really captures the essence of you know, like I think he really captures that Mignola essence when he does Hellboy. Colors don't hurt at all either. Just a fun, beautiful, beautiful issue. This was great. Good story. And there's a big twist at the end that really makes you want to see what's going on. What's funny is that this one really, it builds steam. Like it's almost boring for a little while. And then as you keep going, you're like, oh yeah. And they keep adding a little more in and a little more in. And by the end, you're just like raving for the next issue, which of course you don't have.
Can I guess what the ending thing was?
Sure.
Was it they found the green giant?
No, they found that little guy who used to follow him around.
He was bringing them green beans.
No, actually, the last couple pages were excellent. I mean, they were like, I was like, that's really good. I mean, like you, sometimes you get to the end of an issue and you just like, they nailed it. Like it was quite nailed. Cool. Mignola really owned that one. So.
Cool.
There you go.
Awesome. All right, excellent. So so in addition to all of our opinions, we'd like to hear from you, the iFan base. And if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can, you know, do your pull list. And after you get your comics, you can rate them and review them. I want to highlight a couple of reviews. Our first review comes from Jay Stump, who's writing about Justice Society of America, issue number 21. And he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And of all the users on iFanboy, about 23% picked this as their pick of the week. And Jay Stump says, I've been hearing people being upset lately with the pace of this book and how the story's gone on too long. I, for one, have no issues with this. Geoff Johns can take as long as he wants to tell a story as long as he's writing this book. Same for Green Lantern. He just knows how to weave a story in a way that I understand and love. I could compare him to some other DC writers with this story, but I'll spare you.
All right.
Yeah, so Justice Society number 21... I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. But I have I continue with my kind of annoying Kingdom Come nitpicks. In that, so basically, GOG has now turned on everyone and said, you know, you must worship me. And so now
Neil says that is
GOG. And so the Justice Society, which was fractured before, now is kind of all together, kind of realizing that he's not what he seemed to be, and they're gonna fight him. And during it, two things kind of happen. The Kingdom Come stuff, I think, is you know, I get because Kal-El is there. And so what happens is that GOG shoots down a lightning bolt at Jay Garrick and basically turns him into the Kingdom Come Flash, like the moving so fast, the red blur kind of thing. And which, by the way, gave us one of the best moments in comics this year when Superman punched it. And then Mr. Terrific says, did you just punch a bolt of lightning?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was awesome. That was kind of awesome.
Yeah, no, it was very awesome.
But then right after that, Alan Scott dons the Kingdom Come Green Lantern armor. And my question is that how does, like,
I was like, where the hell did he come from?
Exactly. like,
oh, that makes, I figured I just missed it. I was like, he must have shown up in one of those specials I didn't read.
Right, like it almost seems, to me it seems like it's trying too hard to map these characters to the Kingdom Come world. I know, Connor, you're going to disagree with me and yell at me and tell me I'm wrong.
Jeff Johns can't help it.
Right, yeah.
If there's something to be explained, he will explain it. Right. You won't even, it'll be like me, you won't even see it coming.
Yeah. I don't know, I just felt like, it felt like with these particular characters, because it's like there's, because the Kingdom Come guys aren't these guys, right?
Yeah, no, it's Alan Scott, but it's Wally West is the Flash, but that is Alan Scott in Kingdom Come.
Right, yeah, no, so I mean, right, no, I understand that, but it's not known whether this is Earth One Alan Scott or not. You know,
well, it doesn't make a difference. You can't, I mean, why worry about that?
Because it's a disease, Connor.
Who cares?
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, is this the moment that Alan Scott dons this armor and now he's going to go and create that satellite and he's going to be the Kingdom Come Green Lantern?
No.
Okay, well,
it's just a homage it's a homage to Kingdom Come.
You know, how does Alan Scott know about Kingdom Come?
You know what, Jeff Johns knows these answers, and if he wants to share them, you know he's going to.
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing, too.
You don't know some stuff. You're like, don't be the person in the movie who's like, why did she kill him? We don't know. We've only been here for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not that. I'm not that, but it just, I don't know. That said, I loved how the setting, it starts raining, you know, like when, you know, it's a turbulent kind of, it's a fight, you know, and with Gog taking back everything he gave to everybody, those two pages were amazing.
I never saw that coming. Wow. I mean... That wasn't spelled out at all. Can I say that in spite of my complaining about the fact that there was a special last week, It was nice to have the story going so soon.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah. It was like, oh, we'll get right back into it. Cool.
Connor, did you like it?
Yeah, it was great. It was very good. It was another 4 or 5-star issue.
Cool. All right. Moving on.
Cammy Knoxville reports in on Immortal Iron Fist number 20, giving the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. The user POW for this one is less than a quarter of 1%. So there you go. Swierczynski and Foreman have done a really good job keeping me interested in the characters and story, making it sometimes feel like the first creative team never left. I was also tickled with the idea that Danny Rand can in fact die and his Fist of Iron can't get him out of every situation. So in a time when the economy is forcing readers to trim their pull list week by week, be sure and keep Immortal Iron Fist in your buy pile. Fast, fun, and filled with kung fu action, this is one of the true gems of the Marvel... Are you trying to get on a book? Fast, fun, filled with kung fu action, this is one of the true gems of the Marvel treasure chest. I don't... That's not cool, man. No. You know what? He's right. I wanted to... Take a minute to mention this book too, in that it doesn't feel so much like the other guys haven't left. It feels like a new guy, and I think I like this guy better. There were some really good issues in that Brubaker Fraction run, but I just like how it's consistent, but it feels really cool. I like it a lot. It's a fun book. I'm glad that I didn't stop reading it. I don't love the art, but it does its job. Sometimes I like it, and sometimes I don't. There's, again, some more nice Russ Heath flashback pages in this one, which were always cool. It's just a cool story, and it's interesting, like, Danny has a girlfriend, and, like, she, you know, like, there's a relationship thing going on with them that's pretty interesting, and, you know, it's all these different forces are conspiring against him. Like, he's got this whole corporate thing going on in the real world, and then he's got some, you know, something's trying to kill him from the mystical Kunlun world, and it's cool. I really enjoyed this.
I gotta say, yeah, Swierczynski has impressed me with this. I mean, I said I was gonna leave when Fraction and Brubaker left, but I stayed on and I've enjoyed it. So yeah.
Well, you know, like Swierczynski is building a fan in me.
Yeah,
easily. Like I don't know if I want to read Cable, but I'd think about it now for the first time.
Yeah,
maybe.
So
okay, now.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics, see what everybody else thought of the other comics came out this week. It was a great week, one of the best Spider-Man covers in a while, with Marcos Martin with the Shocker. That was one of my favorite covers in Spider-Man 579. Criminal came out, a whole bunch of other stuff came out. So see what everybody thinks at ifanboy.com/comics.
You can go to InStock Trades to get up to 37% off all of your trade paperback purchases. They got free shipping and orders over $50. With over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order now, with new releases listed every Wednesday. And when you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours. And all that is found at www.instocktrades.com. That's where Josh will go to buy Cable Trades once he decides to...
I'll buy them all. I'll buy everything.
Jump on that bandwagon.
Whatever. I love Cable. That's what I don't tell anyone. My dirty little secret. I have every issue Cable's ever appeared in.
It's the first sign of the apocalypse, I believe.
Yeah. Oddly enough, though, Cable was not the book of the month for December, but the book of the month was Punk Rock and Trailer Parks from Slave Labor Graphics by Durf, lowercase d.
Wow. Well, not on the cover. It's all caps.
This, you may remember, I did a mini not too long ago. Well, it was probably 6 months ago, but about a book that this guy did. It was a single issue called My Friend Dahmer, about his experiences going to school with Jeffrey Dahmer.
I do remember that.
That was my experience with Durf, who does underground comics for the most part. And I got a hold of this, which came out a month or so ago, and maybe two. And I thought it would be fun, whatever. It would have something to do with punk rock. And I was totally sucked into this story about – it's basically like around – the suburbs around Akron, Ohio – in the late 70s, and there's this kid who calls himself the Baron. His name is Otto, and he was a kid who was totally picked on, like, badly, violently, you know, forced to eat the urinal cake kind of thing.
Ugh.
And yeah, exactly. And then, like, at some point during high school, he grew to like 6'6" or something like that, and he just decided to take back his own persona. And so he starts calling himself the Baron, and he starts just having utter supreme self-confidence about the things that he likes and what he's like and what it is, and he just decides he's not going to get picked on anymore. And this story takes place after all that has happened, and you sort of find out what he was like before that. But it's totally like a Revenge of the Nerds kind of scenario, where like the one character's like, this is who I am, this is what it is, and he, you know, goes and he starts working in this club called The Bank, where all of these, which was a real place in Ohio, where all of these seminal sort of new wave and punk rock acts of the late 70s would do shows when they were traveling across the country. And at this point, you know, punk was still very underground. And so he ends up taking the Ramones out for burgers and fries because they're getting on the tour bus, and they're like, hey, you know anywhere to eat? And because the Baron is so self-confident, he just sort of is like, yeah, come on, we'll go get burgers. And he takes them. They have a good time. And then later, Lester Bangs, the music critic, you probably know as Philip Seymour Hoffman's role in Almost Famous,
or from Kerrang, the magazine he did.
Yep, most people who are not, you know, they weren't reading that stuff then.
Yeah.
He wrote for Cream with a K, and no, two E's and a C. Anyway. Him and Joe Strummer of The Clash, like, they go and they start driving around looking to start trouble, and they end up in the parking lot of a Journey concert, and they slash the tires on the Journey tour bus because they're like the evil anti-corporate rock thing. And I get through the whole thing, and I just remember having a feeling of, it was very similar to the feeling of like after I discovered and watched Freaks and Geeks, and I thought, wow, this really captures that time period and that sort of way of thinking. And I thought that out of all the things, and people say, oh, this is rock and roll, or this is punk rock, like, this to me really was what I think of as the best of what punk rock is. It's not cool kids. It's just kids who want to have fun and who are passionate and you know, and don't feel like everybody else, which is every kid, but, you know, it's their way of doing it. And I was just totally impressed by this. And it also just, it did capture that feeling of being in high school. And it, no matter how, you know, popular you may have been in high school, most people probably still felt somewhat like an outsider. And it did that really well, which is impressive in a world where that story gets told a lot, yeah. I think. I was really, really touched and impressed by this book, and I really liked it because it was like, it was all of those things, like a time and a place and retelling what it was like somewhere, but it was also a coming of age story, and it was sort of like you want to see this kid succeed, and it was really neat.
Cool.
There's my spiel.
Yeah, no,
it was very good. I read it.
Oh yeah, I would like to borrow it from you after reading your review. It grabbed me. So yeah.
No, you would like this a lot. It's right up your alley. Yeah. But it's. It's very much a story about taking charge of your own life and doing what makes you happy no matter what anyone else thinks.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's a very uplifting – I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens, a lot of sad stuff that happens, but it's a very uplifting story in the end.
Yeah.
But one thing I really found interesting at the end was there's a little appendix,
mm-hmm.
which explains who the real-life characters are, all the musicians and Lester Bangs and such. And reading through it, man, none of these people made it very far in their lives. They're all dead. They all died no later than 57.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was very sad. Like, reading through it, was like, he died at 39. He died at 49. He died at 55. He died at 50.
It's a tough
50.
Life. It's a tough life, Connor.
Died at 48, 41, 36. Like, it was just like, wow. Yikes. Yeah.
And these guys, you know, they're not famous per se. There's, you know, people like rock historians and music nerds know about them. You know, Steve Beator and who's the Japanese guy? Like, they're known.
Klaus Nomi.
Yeah, they're important. Like, without they were very vital musical links in what came after them. But they're not known, and they died early. They didn't get that recognition. But it's important stuff except for Joe Strummer, sort of after the fact.
And the Ramones, obviously.
Yeah, obviously Ramones. You know. Yeah. But what was cool is that if you think, like now the Ramones and Joe Strummer, these guys are like they're gods. They're these icons. But back then, like they were playing these small shows.
It was very much a move. It was an underground movement.
Was. I just it captured that and. You don't have to know all this music stuff to like it, but that if you
no, you
like
don't.
That,
I mean, I don't know a lot of. I mean, I know half the people in the music appendix, but you really don't need. It's not important.
Yeah, and it sounds like something that I would totally love. So.
Oh yeah, cool. Absolutely.
Yep.
Excellent. I love the bowling with Joe Strummer scene. They take Joe Strummer bowling.
Yeah.
It's very really funny.
Cool. Well, so go to ifanboy.com and up on the top of the page, you can see the book of the month. You can read Josh's review all month, check it out.
You know what yours is going to be?
Crap. I have January, don't I? I didn't even think about that. Son of a bitch. I'm sure it'll be something. I'm gonna pick an omnibus or something, or a large, thick thing that you'll all have to read. So
that's what she said. but you guys will like this book. Just check it out. Very good.
And actually, what would be great, a good companion to this might be the movie Almost Famous, which features Lester Bangs, like you mentioned. And you can get that from Netflix, which has got over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways. They've got Blu-ray titles. They've also got the brand new cool streaming service where you could watch movies on your laptop, or if you have an Xbox 360, you can link up your account and stream it to your Xbox 360, watch it on your TV. Everybody's loving that. So if you're not a member of Netflix yet, what are you waiting for? Go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. The www is important there. And if you sign up, you can start at as low as $4.99 a month, and you get a two weeks totally free to try out the service to see if you dig it, and you'll totally be hooked after you do it. I mean, I've been a Netflix member since 99. It's probably awesome, the awesomest thing I've ever done. So go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy.
I joined Netflix in 84. Yeah. Oh, there's one thing I did want to say. I'm on drugs. That's
so,
all.
So this is a busy week. We had the book of the month, so we're going to skip emails and voicemails this week. We'll get back to them next week. So make sure you write in at contact@ifanboy.com or call 1-888-FANBOYS, 1-888-326-2697. Leave a voicemail. Leave it 30 seconds and tell us where you're from. Tune in next week to hear to hear yourselves yell at us.
Nice. And that is our show for the day. If you're still around. There we go.
Check out ifanboy.com for Ron's full pick of the week review. You can see that there, and you can also see Josh's full book of the month review. It's all over there at the top at ifanboy.com. And if you're listening to this now, we did two extra shows this week, which you have to go back onto the feed and look for. One was an interview with Jim McCann from Marvel. We took your questions, and we interviewed him as a long 2.5 hour or 2 hour show. What's the length? 2.5 hours? 2 hours?
Just over two.
2 hours, 15 minutes.
Yep, that's a long interview show with your questions. And then also, we reviewed Punisher War Zone.
Woo!
Use the word.
So if you wanted to hear either of those shows, you look back on the feed if you're listening on iTunes or some other aggregator, or you can just go to ifanboy.com and there'll be links to those shows there. You can listen to those. So check those out. Don't forget to listen to those. Those were fun shows.
They were. And the holidays are coming, so make sure you head over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, the new location of our Amazon store. You can do all of your holiday shopping there. You can buy comic books. We've put some recommendations of what we like. We've also list the comics that are featured in our video show. But you can also buy video games, movies, everything you get from Amazon, you get it through there. So if you want to help us out a little bit, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. You can just click on one of the Amazon links and go to the Amazon site proper, or click on one of the banners that are on ifanboy.com. But by doing so, helps us out in the long run. So we appreciate it, and good luck with your holiday shopping.
If you like the video show, then you should watch it every Wednesday when it comes out. You can go to revision3.com/ifanboy to get that. This past week, fortuitously, there was a Punisher show, which was probably better than them. Anyway, and then this week, episode 100.
Wow.
Maybe it's going to be a special. We're not going to tell you what it is, but it's got a historical thing going on. We're going to go back. We're going to look at young us.
I'm scared of this episode, by the way.
This episode's awesome.
I think we're building it up.
Yeah, you're right.
Too hard. Yeah.
It's still just us on the couch. Don't.
It's regular length. It's 23 minutes. It's not really. Yeah.
It's cool.
It's
though.
Just, yeah. Josh got an early peek at it. He was very excited about certain things.
True.
So when if you have TiVo and you want to watch that episode, we're on there. We're on TiVo on the free download section. You can watch iFanboy every week on your TiVo in high, glorious high definition.
Yes.
And I would definitely recommend you check out episode 100 in glorious high definition.
Oh, please don't. Please don't. Or at least skip over one particular part. So if you want an iFanboy t-shirt, I know a lot of you have been waiting for it. The Revision 3 store has been being overhauled. If all goes well, it should be live starting this Monday, December 8th. You can go to revision3.com/store to check that out. There's a good chance it might not go live, but it will go live this week. And that's where you can pick up the iFanboy shirts with Big iFanboy logo, says intern on the back. And I'm pretty sure they're going to be cheaper than ever. I think we're going to be doing a little clearance sale to move that inventory to maybe we might have some new designs in 2009. So stay tuned there.
Move units.
Yes.
You can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com, where you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Keep your voicemail around 30 seconds. Tell us where you're from. Tell us your name. And we'll do it on this show or the video show or sometimes on the website as well.
You want to know about social networks? Of course you do. You're a Web 2.0 person, and you probably you got nothing else to do, so why not go on there? Besides, when we do that, we talk about you in terms of units. So I got some more Twitter units today. No, you can go to ifanboy.com/about, and then you'll have links to MySpace and Comic Space, and then Facebook and Twitter and all those things. You can go there and connect with us. Yes. If you're following iFanboy on Twitter, you should probably follow us individually on Twitter too.
Yep.
Just saying. That's what I think.
It only helps. It only expands the whole thing. And if you like us, if you like the show, if you like what we do here on the show, go to iTunes and write a review. Those reviews help new people find the show, and help, you know, that continues the recommendations. Or better yet, you know, go tell somebody. Go to your comic book store and be like, hey, I listened to this great show. Get them to listen to it. Getting more people listening and watching our shows will help us out in the long run as well. So we look to you to kind of help us out with that. So definitely spread the word if you can. We really appreciate everybody who does.
Perhaps you could stand on a rooftop and yell that you are a golden god, and also ifanboy.com is your favorite comic book podcast. it's the all Russell Hammond episode.
I like drugs.
I'm just the lead singer.
Fever dog.
Oh, stop. Oh, it's going to be in my head all night. Oh,
guys,
you fucker.
Guys, you are
motherfucker.
You are home.
I watched that a couple weeks ago, and it took me a week to get Fever Dog out of my head. Now you
I love that all I have to do is either do that, or I am Fever Dog to Connor, and he's stuck for a week with it. It's awesome.
I don't know why that one song just gets stuck in my head.
Fever Dog.
It's the same song as Bullet the Blue Sky by U2. Anyway.
All right. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. And until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Fever Dog.
I've talked a lot. Blah, 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 blah.
Bye-bye.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blog.
Blah, 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 blog. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is like you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.